All right, welcome Brain Health listeners. Today we are talking about insomnia and sleep problems. As many of you know, insomnia is one of the most common problems and certainly one of the most common mental health issues and just one of the most common medical issues in the world. A new study had come out that sort of inspired this episode from the Journal of Psychiatry Research, and it showed that it was looking at the rates of different mental illnesses from before and after the COVID pandemic, and it's showing that there's been a worsening of depression, a worsening of anxiety, a worsening of PTSD, but especially a worsening of insomnia. Compared to a baseline population of people before the pandemic, the study showed that there's a significantly worse rate of all of these mental illnesses, especially insomnia. And the insomnia is worse in healthcare professionals, with about 36% reporting insomnia. So, you know, more than a third having really serious issues. And these are people who have some medical training, and so they should know some of the ways to be able to sleep better. But nevertheless, we've been doing really poorly during this time. So I thought it was something that was worth really diving into here today. It's a passion of mine and something that I'm excited to talk about. So the first thing that somebody should keep in mind if they are having sleep issues is that it is good to work with a doctor on this issue. And why is that? Particularly in older people, it is very possible that there are medical problems associated with the sleep problems. So in particular, I just read this paper that came out of Harvard Men's Health Publishing, and it was talking about that men in particular, old men, have especially high rates of sleep problems. And a large proportion of that can be explained by medical problems. So one of the most common things that I see in my patients is, especially in older males, is that they are getting up to urinate multiple times in the middle of the night. This is a very common phenomenon in people that are experiencing BPH, or benign prostatic hyperplasia, which is where your prostate grows as you age. As it does that, it blocks the urinary tract. And so what happens is when men go to go pee, they're forcing it out and they're not able to empty their bladder completely. So instead of, you know, starting with an empty tank that then fills up with urine, they have a tank that's half full, three quarters full, and it only takes a little bit for it to fill up again and for them to have to urinate again. And because of that, they're waking up multiple times in the middle of the night and not able to get good quality sleep because of that. So that would be one example why it's important to work with the doctor, because they could help to ask you questions to identify, you know, what medical thing is going on here. Another thing that is very common would be in people that snore. If you have a spouse or a partner that notices that you snore a lot, then you should be concerned about having OSA, or obstructive sleep apnea. Sleep apnea is one of the most problematic and underdiagnosed diseases out there. If you are obese, if you have a relatively thick or large neck, it is a very possible thing that you have obstructive sleep apnea. And what's happening in obstructive sleep apnea? What happens is, because you have the extra weight around your neck, the tissues there are actually pretty gentle and pretty sensitive to changes in weight. So when you're laying and sleeping at night, if you just have a little bit more weight there, it's going to push down and collapse your airway. And that's what causes a snoring sound. And eventually it collapses all the way to where you can't breathe and you wake up from your sleep. So somebody that has obstructive sleep apnea, or OSA, they multiple times in the middle of the night will be waking up because they can't breathe. And this causes major issues. First of all, you have very disruptive sleep patterns. You're waking up multiple times in the middle of the night, you know, gasping for air, and that can disrupt your REM sleep or your deep sleep stages, which are really important for memory consolidation, for feeling well rested. And it can be problematic for your blood pressure. There can be all sorts of medical issues related to it. And you're going to feel like crap during the day. You're going to feel very sleepy and you won't know why. So anyone that snores, anyone that is obese, it is worth talking with your doctor about this and considering doing a sleep study where you would, you know, go into a lab and they would measure, you know, how many of these instances you have when you stop breathing. And then you might be diagnosed with sleep apnea and you would be given a CPAP. A lot of people find these CPAPs very uncomfortable because what they are, it's continuous positive air pressure pushing in through, you know, through your airways to put pressure in there so that they can't collapse. And that's the idea. And it's very uncomfortable at first, but you get used to it and you start feeling a lot more well-rested and it protects you against, you know, all of the issues with blood pressure and the, you know, the heart and brain sort of side effects or sequelae that can go along with that, like a higher risk of heart attack or stroke, as well as having better mood. And feeling more clear cognitively. So obstructive sleep apnea would be another medical thing to take into consideration. Something else to take into consideration would be your thyroid. Somebody that is too high of thyroid might have difficulty sleeping because they'll feel very energetic or they might have heart palpitations. So anyways, the first recommendation, like I'm saying, is to see a doctor and have them work you up for these medical problems. As part of that, they'll also look at your medications. There are different medications that can get in the way of your sleep for sure. And so they might want to take some of those away or change them for something else, something better. So the next tip for good sleep, and now I'm really going to go into sleep hygiene. So if you want to read more about this after this, go look up sleep hygiene tips or sleep hygiene infographics, and you can see some of the best practices to have good sleep hygiene, which is really just practicing the right things for your body to be well rested. So the first thing is start the day well. So it's important to remember that, you know, our day determines how well our night goes. And so one of the best things that we can do, which I don't always follow myself, today is a Saturday and I definitely did not do this, but it is to wake up at the same time every day. So with all of sleep, it is all about establishing the circadian rhythms that our body rely so heavily upon. And, you know, just like all of the plants and really pretty much all the animals out there, our bodies rely on having these sleep-wake cycles that are reliable. And so what we want to do is choose the same time to wake up every single day of the week. If you sleep in on the weekends, what you're doing is essentially giving yourself a jet lag where, you know, if you're staying up multiple nights or multiple hours later and waking up multiple hours later, it's going to mess up this cycle that your body gets in of where it releases certain hormones at a particular time at night to prepare you for bed. And you know, that it primes your body for that sleep phase. So try to wake up at the same time every day, a time that is good for both weekends and weekdays. And then what we want to do as well is try to do things during the day that will make us tired later at night. So exercise is one of the best ways to do this. You want to exercise earlier in the day rather than later because it can be stimulating. So if you exercise like after dinner or 8 p.m., 9 p.m., you might find that your heart rate is still up by the time that you're trying to calm down and go to bed. And that can actually be an issue for people. So I usually suggest doing that earlier rather than later. Try to avoid naps as well during the day if you have sleep issues. If you are somebody that can sleep well at night and you can take naps during the day, then there's nothing wrong with that. Go ahead and take your naps. But if you are somebody that's struggling with your sleep at night, then you certainly want to avoid naps during the day. If you are going to take a nap, it's important to not go too deep into your sleep cycles. So as many of you may know, your sleep has different phases to it. And the first stages are very light sleep and they get darker or they get deeper. And then you go into your REM stage of your sleep. And the goal is to not go into that deep stage of your sleep, which happens at about a half hour. You start to go into the deeper phases of sleep. So when you wake someone up from a deep sleep, they're going to feel groggy and they're going to feel like they want to continue sleeping. If you wake someone up at the end of a REM phase or during light sleep, then you can wake up easily and feel, you know, like you can return back to work or to whatever you're doing. So for me, I always time my naps for between 15 to 20 minutes to keep myself from not going into the deep sleep phases. So that would be, you know, what you would want to do if you want to take a nap. So the second tip would be to energize early and not late. So I already sort of touched on this a little bit with the exercise, that you want to do something energetic earlier in your day and not later. It's the same for stimulants. So if you are a caffeine drinker, caffeine can be a really big problem for people that have sleep issues. So the way that caffeine works is it inhibits our body's adenosine receptors. And adenosine is what makes us feel sleepy. It's what comes on like a wave, you know, about a half hour before we fall asleep. And what the caffeine does is it inhibits that. And so you can actually measure how much of the caffeine is in your blood after taking it. And it's around 6 hours. If for somebody that has caffeine, you know, with dinner, they're going to have at least half of it in their blood by the time that they're going to bed. And that can really mess with your sleep. And really anytime past noon, you're going to have, you know, 75% of the caffeine gone by the time you go to bed, but still there'll be 25% there that can still keep you from feeling sleepy. So avoid caffeine anytime afternoon or even after like 10 a.m. if you have sleep problems. Let's see. So the next thing, and this is where I see so many problems nowadays, is preparing for bed with the sunset. So our bodies, as part of this circadian rhythm, we are naturally taking cues from the environment and from the light of the environment around us. So as the sun is setting, our body puts different motions in place to prepare ourselves to go to sleep. But nevertheless, especially in the wintertime, you know, if the sun's going down at 4:30, we are all accustomed to staying up many, many hours after that, and even working many hours after that. And what's happening when we're working is we're looking at screens or we're watching TV, and it's all, you know, shooting bright lights at us. So it's confusing our bodies because, you know, at the start of darkness, we start to think it's getting closer to bedtime, but then these bright lights shining into our faces then confuse our bodies into thinking it's daytime. And for so many people, we are using our screens all the way up until bedtime. And that is something that will signal to our body that it's daytime. It's daytime. It's daytime. And so then we brush our teeth, get into bed, and we don't feel sleepy yet because in our brains, it's still daytime. So what I suggest that people do is follow the sun. As the sun sets, we want to remove unnatural light from our environment. So turning off the lights, and then trying to use very dim lights like candles and maybe a weak lamp, and just functioning under that during nighttime. Then what I use to be able to keep working at night is an app on my computer, which is called Flux, F.LUX. And Flux helps to filter out the blue light from the screen. So blue light is in particular the type of light that inhibits or that really signals daytime to our bodies. And so if we can block that out and really only take in red or orange light, then it's going to not have the same effect on our brain. So so I like to use Flux, and some of the smartphones have a feature now where you can do that and have them turn more orange or amber colored at night. So that would definitely be something that I would suggest. So that's one of the first ways to prepare for bed, is to create a dark environment as the sky gets dark, and to use candles or lamps. Something else that you can do is wear blue light blocking glasses. So, you know, if you are somebody that wears glasses, you can wear glasses that block out that blue light that stimulates you as well close to bedtime. And then, of course, you want to limit your alcohol consumption. Alcohol is, you know, people say that they used to, you know, call it a sleep aid, but what you'll find probably on a night if you drink too much is that you wake up feeling not very refreshed. And indeed, what happens with alcohol is that it allows us to feel more drowsy. So we may drift off to sleep easier, but the quality of our sleep is not as good. So we won't wake feeling well rested. As far as the effects that alcohol has into the next day as well, it will make us feel more sort of antsy and less calm the day afterwards. That can continue to affect our sleep for a day or two afterwards of heavy drinking. So avoid that and avoid eating close up till bedtime as well. So then, as we're then getting closer to actually entering the bedroom and getting prepared to go to bed, then it's really important to spend the last hour without any screens, without much stimulation, and just doing things like prayer, meditation, or reading books under, you know, a dim lamp. That will really calm us down. And then the final step of this is to create a sleep sanctuary. So remember, the bedroom is for two things only. It's for sleep and sex. And for anyone that is using your bed as a place to work, if you're bringing a laptop into the bed, that is a bad idea. Just hanging out there during the day, what it's doing is it's you're not creating a signal in your brain that this place is for sleeping. And so your brain, you know, is confused when you step in there. So what you want to do is reserve it only for sleep and sex. As part of that, you know, I suggest people remove TVs, computers from the bedroom. If you have a desk that you tend to work at, you know, really consider removing that and working elsewhere. And you want to create a dark, cool, pitch black environment. So you may need some window or room darkening shades and actually, the sleeping environment that's best for sleeping is quite cold. So, you know, close to 60 to 65 degrees, if you can handle it. If you have a sleep partner that can't handle that, then there are some things called chili pads where you can pump cold water through it and, you know, create a cool environment for yourself only that doesn't affect your partner, if that's something that is helpful for you. Additionally, silencing the phones is super important. A lot of people sleep with their phone next to them. And if it's dinging or ringing throughout the night, that can really impact the quality of sleep. And then coordinate with the sleep partner to make sure that you can create an environment that's free from interruptions. So if you both can get on the same sleep pattern, that can be really good for helping to make sure that one of you waking up or one of you going to bed after the other one isn't waking up the other. That can be really problematic for couples. And then trying to make sure the environment is as soundproofed as possible. And so you may need to use like a sound machine or something like that. So these are some different tips for better sleep quality. And like I said, it's one of the most common things that I come across. It causes tremendous suffering in patients. So first, work with your doctor. Make sure that you don't have something like sleep apnea, that you don't have a frequent urination issue, that you don't have an issue with your medications. Start to use some of these sleep hygiene things of, waking up at the same time, avoiding naps, of avoiding alcohol and food right up against bedtime, trying to create a dark environment from the time the sun goes down, creating a very peaceful sleep environment that's free from distractions. Doing things like this will really make a big difference in your life. And I hope you found this to be helpful. Please be sure to subscribe, like, share, and let your friends know about Brain Health with Dr. Nissen. I hope to keep bringing you a lot of great information and value to make your life better. All right, so have a great day.